Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, February 12th, the birthday of President Abraham Lincoln. I must acknowledge that and celebrate in some way today. I forgot about the celebration. This hour of the program, our guest has written a terrific book. We interviewed him about this book about a year ago, Informing the News, The Need for Knowledge-Based Journalism, written by Thomas Patterson. He writes at the beginning of the book that journalists are our chief sense makers. Journalists are other things too, but we need them mostly to help us understand the world of public affairs beyond our direct experience. This week, journalists have become people that were wondering what kind of sense they're making out of stories that aren't true. We have a very big, really, it's a very big news story. Brian Williams suspended for 6 months without pay also this week, and we'll get to this later in the hour because we had Jon Stewart, which was also huge news, saying that he's going to be leaving The Daily Show sometime this year. A couple of responses, one in the New York Times, letters to the editor today, and one on our Facebook page, which I think kind of summarize what people are saying about Brian Williams, and that's where we'll focus most of our attention this hour. A former correspondent for NBC, Ed Rabel, wrote today, suspending Williams is a very healthy event in the history of television news. I don't think it should stop with Mr. Williams. The entire industry has been corrupted by news managers and performers who've made a travesty of what was once an honorable enterprise. And on our Facebook page from David, I think that what Williams saw or thought he saw was blinded by the light from his own star rather than guided by journalistic instinct. But why aren't the big mouth bullies and liars out there held up to any standards at all? And he mentions Hannity, Limbaugh, and Beck. So we're going to talk about this issue this hour, and I think we'll have some really interesting phone calls. I know we're going to have an interesting discussion with our guest. Thomas Patterson is Bradley Professor of Government and the Press at the Harvard Kennedy School's Schoenstein Center on Media, Politics, and Political Policy. He is the author of a number of books, including this one, which is well worth a read. I haven't read the others yet, but I should sometime. The Vanishing Voter and Out of Order. We'll be welcoming phone calls. What do you make of the Brian Williams story? His apology for that, the action that was taken by NBC to suspend him without pay for 6 months. Do you imagine he will be back? Would you agree that this should happen? The whole industry ought to beyond scrutiny here, that it's been corrupted by performers and by news managers? Or would you think that this really isn't all that big a deal? There are a lot of people, mostly on cable networks, who are not telling the truth each and every day. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Professor Thomas Patterson, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Kathleen. Delighted to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. I love your book. I've passed it along to many people.
Oh, thank you.
And they've loved your book as well. Well, it's an interesting week when you look at examination of the people who are supposed to be giving us all of our news, our chief sense makers. Now we're trying to make sense of what it is they have said. It is a huge thing, I think. Maybe it's just because I've watched, I watch nightly news every night. I watch different channels, but I have watched Brian Williams quite a bit for, and I have since I was in high school. Well, I've always watched the nightly news. It's part of my day, and it's just a huge event to have him no longer there for exaggerating a story about his time on this helicopter in Iraq. What do you think of the punishment, and what do you think of the attention? Is it a big deal?
Well, I think yes and no. I mean, Brian Williams, like the other anchors, you know, is a big part of our lives. I mean, certainly smaller than in the days of Walter Cronkite and Huntley Brinkley and the like. I mean, network television as a whole has shrunk in its stature, and that's taken the anchors down a notch or two. But, you know, we do get attached to them, and this isn't the first time it's happened. You may recall that Dan Rather lost his anchor position probably a little more than a decade ago because of what turned out to be a somewhat false report about George W. Bush's military record, and even today, kind of rather stands by the story that at the heart of it, it was correct, and you know, there was a piece of it that was misleading. But I think when we go through these periods with these individuals who are very prominent in the news industry, probably more prominent than they deserve, and I could say something about that in a minute, but you know, when we go through these periods, you know, just as with the Rather story, you know, it dominated headlines for a week or so and took a lot of the air out of the rest of the news. I mean, in some ways, it did push aside probably what are more compelling stories, but, you know, there is a fixation with personality, and when the media itself is under scrutiny, you know, guess who steps up and turns the spotlight on? It's the media. So, right. You know, we're in the middle of one of those whirlwinds.
Another thing that apparently was happening was that nobody was really looking after the news product to make sure that it was truthful, that it was fair. Nobody was looking after him because of the merger of NBC and Comcast, some people are saying a lot of really good reporters left after Comcast took over. And ironically, as all these meetings are taking place about Brian Williams, there are also bigger meetings that maybe the people who should have been at both meetings had to decide where to go, because the Comcast Time Warner merger meetings are also taking place. And really, isn't it all about money?
Well, kind of, yes. Although, I mean, this story to me is a little different than a lot of the stories about the media or media figures having gone wrong. I mean, I put this one in kind of the misdemeanor category, not the felony category. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not someone who went on the air with a fabricated story, you know, who just made something up to have a splash as a story. I think this relates to what you talked about, and that's the increasing monetization of the media. And one of the things that we, as an audience, kind of look for now in our reporters and our anchors is that, you know, we want them to be something like action heroes as well as people who bring us the news. So, you know, you get Anderson Cooper during Katrina out there, you know, wading, you know, knee-deep and sometimes thigh-deep through the water. We get the anchors heading off to the war zones to put the you know, the helmet on and the flak jacket and go out with the troops. You know, in some ways, that's our expectation. And to some degree, you know, I'm not surprised that somewhere along the line, one of these individuals didn't begin to think of himself or herself as an actual action hero and mm-hmm. embellish the story. And I think that's what we're looking here. But it is a somewhat different kind of discretion or indiscretion than fabricating a story to, you know, kind of puffing up your own life and kind of what's happened to you in the course of that life.
And we're even doing it with local news reporters. I'm astonished the money that they spend to send local anchors, you know, abroad to cover a story or to California to cover a story. I'm thinking, do you really need to send somebody? What is that doing? Why do you need to send a local person to cover what's a national story?
Well, there is a market strategy, actually, behind all of this. And so you try to build up your anchors. You need a recognizable face on your news program, because one of the things that happens in this era when we watch television with the clicker in our hand is that one of the things that gets us to stop is a familiar face. And so when you come across a familiar face, you pause for at least a second and think about whether you're going to watch that program or not. And so in some ways, the anchor becomes the face of the newscast. Now, that's always been true to a degree, and certainly it was true during the era of Walter Cronkite, but there the emphasis was much more on the news side itself, putting out good news stories, the anchor kind of navigating through the 30-minute newscast, not the action hero, even though, you know, I think Cronkite did go off to a war zone, but not quite in the way they do today with the frequency and also, you know, with all of the hoopla that attends it. But what they're trying to do is to build these people up in some ways so that becomes the brand. Mm-hmm. And that leads us to to find that brand on a regular basis, and of course that then converts into audience, and audience converts into advertising dollars, and that's kind of the formula, or one of the formulas.
Well, you bring up Walter Cronkite, who I miss desperately to this day, and not only did he go over to a war zone, but because he seemed to know what he was talking about, and he was a hard-working reporter who reported during World War II and had this breadth of knowledge and memory and worked at what he did, he really informed the American public and the American president who about the Vietnam War, and really kind of changed things because of his analysis, because he was helping us to understand the world of Vietnam, which may be the role of a journalist.
Well, in the early part of the Vietnam War, the press coverage actually wasn't very critical, and but then with the Tet Offensive in 1968, you know, that was the point at which Walter Cronkite basically said, you know, I think, and on the air, that this war appears to be lost. And President Johnson happened to be watching that newscast and reportedly turned to an aide and said, you know, I think we're going to lose the American people. And at that point, of course, if you're the president of the United States and you lose the public around a war, eventually you're going to lose that war, too. So, you know, I do think the tone of the reporting, what the aim of the reporting was quite different in the 60s and the 70s. But now we're in this hyper-competitive cable internet era, and we've got lots and lots of choices, not just the three that we had back in that period, and they're all scrambling for audience, and so we're being subjected to almost every kind of audience gathering device that you can imagine, and one of those is to really puff these anchors up, make them larger than life. They have to act that way, then they become the action hero. But the minute that happens, you know, something like this somewhere along the line was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who's going to, you know, embellish their experience in a way that enhanced them, at least in their own eyes, and perhaps those immediately around them, and it was going to turn out to be false.
You mentioned Walter Lippmann, who you obviously greatly admire, deservedly so, in your book, Informing the News. And you say that Lippmann noted, democracy falters if there is no steady supply of trustworthy and relevant news. Journalists are failing to deliver it, you say. Does that extend to the people who are giving us the news as well? Because it is television, because these people are in our homes for a good chunk of our lives when you look at half hour a day or beyond. Does that person need to be trustworthy? And if you have lost trust because you embellished a story or you lied and said you were on a plane that you weren't on, and people in the military, another institution we revere, say this isn't true, what you've said isn't true, can you be thought of as somebody who's trustworthy?
Well, I mean, this is a personal opinion, but my sense is that Brian Williams probably is cooked. Now he's taken the 6-month leave, unpaid leave, and you know, NBC promises to bring him back at that point, and he might well come back. I mean, once you lose trust in one of those positions, it's really hard to get it back, and especially when so much of what's being said about you is in the category of ridicule. You know, and once you start appearing,
yes,
in newspapers with a very long nose, and, you know, as if you're Pinocchio and the like, once the criticism turns to ridicule, then it's really, really hard to come back. I mean, you think about someone like, you know, Anthony Weiner, the congressman who, you know, basically lost his seat in Congress because he became an object of ridicule because of his behavior on the web and so on. I think that's the tipping point. I think it's very hard to get the trust back when you've fallen to, in other people's minds, to that level. So, you know, we'll see. This still has some way to play itself out. And, you know, given the magnitude of this, I don't think in some ways the punishment is going to fit the crime at all. I obviously he was foolish to say what he said, and you know, and I mean, that was just a dumb thing to do. But there have been many worse offenses in the realm of journalism than this, where people have paid little or no cost. So, but I think it may well cost him his career. Because,
yeah, I think you're right.
It tipped. You know, it just dipped past that point where it's hard to think about him getting his credibility.
Right. A lot of the theme that runs, and we'll hear from our audience in a moment, and we'll hear more of this, I'm sure, but we have a lot of Facebook messages saying that what he did was wrong. Let me go back to what David said. He was blinded by the light from his own star. But why aren't the big mouth bullies and liars out there held up to any standards at all? And we hear a lot of criticism on Facebook of Hannity and Limbaugh and Beck, Fox News particularly, who many of our people who have commented have said are not held to any kind of standard. Is there truth in that?
Well, I think David has asked a good question, and my sense is that the talk show business is a different business. I mean, it's about public affairs, but it's deeply about entertainment, and it's really deeply about advocacy. And I would hold, you don't want Hannity or Limbaugh or the others back, telling big, bold-faced lies on their shows, and sometimes they have done that. And but it's not quite the same, I think, for the category that we call journalists, the people that we depend on for our daily news. And I would go back to the Lippmann quote that you provided about our need for relevant and trustworthy news. I think talk shows are mostly entertainment, and then there's other sources where we go to get really our information that we're going to base our opinions on, or we should be basing our opinions on. I think there the standard of accuracy has to be absolute. For the others, that's kind of buyer's beware. If you take what Rush Limbaugh says as gospel, that's probably as much your problem as it is Rush's.
Mm-hmm. We're going to go to phone calls, and we'll do that in just a moment. Thomas Patterson is our guest this hour. We interviewed him when his a very worthwhile book came out about a year ago, Informing the News, The Need for Knowledge-Based Journalism. We're welcoming phone calls. We're talking about Brian Williams' fall from grace. Do you think that he is cooked, as our guest does? What does it say about who he is, how people present the news, the need to be a performer, to be embellished, and to embellish what it is that who you are, rather than being honest and being truthful, the role of honesty and trustworthiness in the news. And I want to talk to him more about this Gallup poll, which he mentions in his book, where only 8% of respondents, this was 2012, said they had a great deal of confidence in the news media's ability to report the news fully, accurately, and fairly, which seems to me is a very frightening thing. Thomas Patterson is Bradley Professor of Government and the Press at Harvard. He has written other books. The Vanishing Voter looks at the causes and consequences of electoral participation. And his book on the media's political role, Out of Order, received the American Political Science Association's Graeber Award as the best book of the decade in political communication. He's written other books as well. And we're welcoming phone calls. I would imagine we'll have many of them. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, where we already have many messages, is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's welcome phone calls, 800-486-8655. We're talking about Brian Williams. And before we start taking calls, let's actually listen to what Brian Williams had to say in case for some reason you have missed this story. This is Brian Williams apologizing to his audience for his lie on Wednesday, February 4th.
On this broadcast last week, in an effort to honor and thank a veteran who protected me and so many others after a ground fire incident in the desert during the Iraq War invasion, I made a mistake in recalling the events of 12 years ago. It did not take long to hear from some brave men and women in the air crews who were also in that desert. I want to apologize. I said I was traveling in an aircraft that was hit by RPG fire. I was instead in a following aircraft. We all landed after the ground fire incident and spent two harrowing nights in a sandstorm in the Iraq desert. This was a bungled attempt by me to thank one special veteran and, by extension, our brave military men and women, veterans everywhere, those who have served while I did not. I hope they know they have my greatest respect and also now my apology.
What do you think? 800-486-8655. Ernest is our first caller in Vernon County. Hi, Ernest.
Hello.
Hi.
I know this is, discussion is focused around journalism, but I view people like Brian Williams as an actor playing the part of a journalist. And like all good actors, when you're on a film, your purpose is to have your audience believe in the character that you're portraying. And he's lost that trust. But they're not really journalists. They're more actors than they are a part of. They just deliver the news instead of trying to make the news. So.
Professor Patterson.
No, I think what Ernest says is pretty accurate. I mean, especially for contemporary journalism and the anchor's role in it. Now, some of them have come up through the ranks. So, you know, Dan Rather, before he became an anchor, had spent a lot of time as a reporter. Kathleen, you mentioned earlier, Walter Cronkite's reporting during World War II before he became an anchor. So, you know, it's not as if they're somehow outside the journalism community and haven't done journalism. But I do think the anchor's role is a different one. You know, in Europe, the anchor's role is not very prominent. They're called readers. We don't try to build them up and make them larger than life. But, you know, we do everything commercially here. So, you know, we do puff them up. And there's a point, I think you're right, Ernest, they become more anchor than, or more actor than they are journalist.
Yeah. The only thing that he gave me that I'm going to miss desperately is all those great dog stories, Thomas, every week, because I love dogs.
Well, that was one of the great things. And I thought he was quite good. And this is where I think he did retain his journalism portfolio. Was, you know, he was executive producer too as well. So I mean, he was not simply telling the news; he was assembling the news. He was
right.
He was working in the newsroom to figure out what stories would be told, how they would be told, what order they would receive, and the like. So, you know, he was working at journalism, but at the same time, you know, and again, part of it's our expectation of what we're looking for in these television personalities. You know, we want them to be larger in life. You know, we want them to be out in the field to show that they can report from the field, and we like to be taken to the scene of the action, and we like it even better if they're there. So, you know, we're part of this equation. It's not just a one-sided street that we're on with the networks.
Gary sends this email. I can't understand how you can call this a misdemeanor. Mr. Williams has lost his personal credibility and proven he cannot be trusted. We ought to have high enough morals and ethics ourselves not to accept people or politicians or newscasters who downright lie.
Well, you know, I understand Gary's point, and I do think that there is a position of trust that attends certain roles that you play in society, and I certainly would put our network anchors in that. I would put our politicians into that category and the like. But, you know, there's an interesting study that was done a number of years ago that, you know, wanted to find out how many times each day people lie. And the average person lies 6 or 7 times a day. And now a lot of those are small lies like, you look great today. I mean, you know, they're in the category of making life a little bit easier. But, you know, I'm a Vietnam vet. So I spent a year in Vietnam in Special Forces. And, you know, there is a fog of war. There are, you do end up conflating things. You know, I've been in VFW clubs where I've heard stories that I probably were not quite the truth, and you kind of have a little bit of a sense of that. You know, hopefully I haven't told them myself, but, you know, who knows what happens to the brain after 40 years or something like that. But, you know, when I think about, and the reason I say it's a misdemeanor, when I think about journalism, where I think journalism really gets into the felony category is when you have plagiarism, as we had with Janet Cook She won a Pulitzer Prize for her reporting. Those stories were made up.
Mm-hmm.
Those weren't real stories. We had Jason Blair at the New York Times, the same thing. You know, this is someone who's kind of exaggerating a personal experience. And, you know, I think we're all kind of in that category. So I think in ordinary life, this is one of those small indiscretions. It becomes something bigger than that when you're an anchor or when you're a prominent politician, and he's going to pay for it. And I think it probably will cost him his career. It certainly will have cost him a large chunk of his audience, even if he does come back. It's cost him a lot of money. I think in some ways, he's going to be punished quite severely for this, and there are bigger crimes in journalism than kind of self-inflation.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Ernest, for your call. Dennis in Wautoma. Hi.
Hi. One thing I don't understand is how people say they've lost this trust. How can you trust somebody when you don't know him? You see him 15 minutes on the news and you trust what he's saying? He hasn't done anything all of us have done. It. We've had presidents lie to us, and people forget about it. The next big story comes along, and this is old news, it'll be forgotten. So I hope he hangs in there and gets back.
Professor?
Well, I mean, that's a really interesting question, Dennis, or a really interesting comment. I mean, you know, why is it that we invest trust in people that we don't know, that we really are just looking at through the television screen? You know, we don't only do that with journalists. We do that with some politicians. We do that with some Hollywood actors and the like. I think that says a lot about us. But, you know, I'll take you back to a moment that Kathleen and I shared. Watching Walter Cronkite night after night. And there was a point in the late 60s, early 70s, when the Gallup poll went out and asked, you know, who was the most trusted person in the United States? And Walter Cronkite was at the top of the list. Now, this was at a time where, you know, we had lies told about Vietnam by the Johnson administration. We had Nixon and Watergate. So this was a pretty low point for the kind of public figures that normally end up at the top of that list. But nevertheless, there is a tendency for audiences to really invest in the people who are bringing them the news and to trust them. And with that, I think, goes an expectation. And that's, to me, the line that Brian Williams crossed. He didn't meet that expectation. And that's a public responsibility that attends that position.
Well, what's interesting is now, with the departure of Jon Stewart sometime this year, I've heard various polls saying that people believe that Jon Stewart is the most trusted person in the news business in this country, which is really interesting. And I love his style. I love the fact that he's not trying to be self-aggrandizing in any way. He's kind of humble in a way. He's got a terrific staff, and people on all sides of the aisle say that this is a solid operation. He's going to be missed. They'll be able to fill the role. But isn't it interesting that we have now somebody who is the anchor of that kind of show who we consider to be trusted in America?
Well, you know, Jon Stewart is a really interesting case. I mean, you know, Jon Stewart has said many times that, you know, if you take my show as gospel, you don't understand my show. You know, that's not what we're about. Yeah, we'll talk about current events. We'll talk about them in cutting ways. We won't tell you lies. But, you know, a lot of this is tongue-in-cheek. And I thought Jon Stewart probably had the best commentary on Brian Williams. And the way that Stewart approached the Brian Williams controversy was to say, you know, you're spending 2, 3, 4 pages of your newspaper, you know, pillaring Brian Williams. And then he didn't say it in exactly those terms, but that's basically what he was saying. And he said, finally, you're putting the blame for Iraq on someone's shoulders. And what he was saying,
right,
effectively, was that the big responsibility of the media to kind of tell us the big picture,
mm-hmm,
do it in a trustworthy way, in a way where we could really engage it on important issues, That's what they're not doing. That's the real crime in the news industry. And this is pretty small potatoes relative to that kind of reporting.
And we have an email that's come in just now to that exact point from Jim in Madison. The big picture is about the accountability to the run-up and the hyping of the U.S. invasion and occupation of Iraq based on lies by the mainstream media. I don't care about Williams' embellishments about being shot at, but why are the media given a pass when this nation engages in war with no accountability? The Fourth Estate has let down the American people.
Well, and we had, you know, and there were a few news organizations that kind of publicly apologized for their pre-invasion reporting. The Washington Post did that, and the New York Times did that. But what was really kind of interesting was that a lot of the news organizations said they did a great job of reporting the lead-up. And if you go back and look at their coverage, very little scrutiny of the claims that were being made by the administration, very little attempt to bring in kind of the other point of view into the discussion. You know, they don't have to decide these issues for us, and it's not their job to say that the president's wrong. But what they need to do is to be properly skeptical and for us to hear other voices and other viewpoints. And they did not do that in the lead-up to Iraq. That was the real problem with that coverage. And here we've got kind of Brian Williams kind of dangling in the wind over inflating a moment of time when he happened to be in the war zone.
Mm-hmm. You talk about, and I think this is very important, and I wonder who's doing this now, that we need understanding of stories based on context, history, culture, future implications. We need interpretation of events. Because a lot of these are very, very large events. Who's doing that? Where do you go to get that? Is that the responsibility of the press? And if they've forsaken it, why have they?
Well, I think there are some good information sources out there. You know, I think there are. I mean, there's this very good story that has come out recently about the Swiss bank that was deeply investigated about all of the money laundering and everything they were doing, people hiding their money. They're a very important public interest story. You know, I do think there's some great journalism out there. It tends to be long form, tends to be done by experienced journalists. Unfortunately, a lot of those have been laid off in the cost-cutting measures that newsrooms have gone through. But generally speaking, I think too much news is brought to us by people who don't understand the issue that they're covering. And if you don't understand the issue that you're covering, you're not going to ask the right questions of the sources. You're not going to be able to kind of open up windows that are important in that story that the audience needs to know, because you don't even know the windows exist. And I think there was a lot of that in the lead-up to Iraq, that they weren't asking the right questions. They didn't know kind of enough about a strategic situation, about what it would take for a weapon of mass destruction actually to be capable of being delivered, and delivered in a way where it would cause the kind of damage that at least the Bush administration was intimating Iraq was capable of doing. Those kinds of questions weren't being asked. And I think they weren't being asked in part because the journalists who were covering that story didn't know enough about the subject area that they were assigned.
In other words, we need knowledge-based journalism.
We do need knowledge-based journalism.
Thanks, Dennis, for your call. Joanne in West Dallas. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I was telling your screener, I'm not sure how to ask this, but I've been sitting here thinking, why do we identify so much with newscasters or anchor people? Like when Peter Jennings died, I had never met him, but I felt so sorry for such a long time and missed him. And when you go on vacation, John Munson does a great job, but I can't wait for Kathleen Dunn to come back.
And, oh, Joanne.
It's just not the same. And, and I mean, I don't think we identify with other professions so much. So is it something in the audience that that is responsible for putting people on a pedestal like that? Or, you know, what is it that that makes the relationship, I guess, is what I'm trying to figure out.
Well, actually, I probably should defer on this one to Kathleen. I mean, the
I don't have a clue. It's just me. I'm a regular person.
Right. So, you know, but look, you know, we get a sense, a little bit of a sense of these people as personalities. I mean, I think, you know, you get a, you know, they remind you of someone, and they remind another journalist of someone else. I mean, so you get a little bit of a sense that you think you know them, that you think you understand them, and I think that begins to kind of create a relationship, and then you get comfortable with their style. And you know, that's one of the things about anchors is they're with us for year after year,
A long time.
And for night after night after night.
Yes. I mean,
with it, you know, Bob Simon, for example, who just was just killed in a car accident.
Yes, terrible.
What a terrific reporter Bob Simon was, and he was an authentic hero. I mean, he was a he reported from a lot of battlefronts and was out front often in those particular cases. But someone like Bob Simon, you know, would be on periodically, but not regularly, and certainly not someone you'd see 12 times over the course of the 30-minute newscast. So we just become very familiar with these people. They become comfortable. We look to them for our news, and at some point we begin to transfer a little bit of affection in their direction. And maybe that's why these falls, if this one happens to be an anchor that we really like, that's why it seems like a little bit of a personal loss at the same
right.
time.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it does. You spend a lot of time with them. I've been doing radio for 39 years in Milwaukee, and I don't think of myself as on the radio. I really don't. I just have this terrific job, and I love what I do. But I am a pretty, you know, regular person. I'm a regular person who's interested in a lot of different issues. But when I think about what Joanne said, if she's been listening to me for all these years, you know, she knows we've gone through life experiences together. I might be the one doing the show, but, you know, we've lived through a lot of events together and we've talked about them. And it's over the course of 39 years. It's a long time. Or to be on the nightly news for 10 years to spend all that time with Brian Williams. That's a lot of time.
Well, it is
in
a
your
lot
house.
Of time.
Yeah.
Yeah. The nice thing about my students is they can get rid of me at the end of the semester. And I have to spend their lives with me, right?
Right, yeah. Well, maybe that's not a good thing. Yeah. Joanne, thanks so much for your call. Ray in Rhinelander, hi.
Hi.
Hi, Ray.
Once again, I'm glad this is being covered. I have a personal opinion about this and some of my own experiences. When you're in situations like Brian was, especially when there is firefight going on and a variety of different things, whether it's ahead of you or behind you, I mean, sometimes you get things mixed up. You're excited. You're the person talking. He knows he has experience. I'm not excusing Brian, but the fact remains is he's brought us so much, and he's been in areas that we can't go to. He made a mistake. Give him a break. I mean, come on. I mean, the guy. It isn't the end of the world. So I'm gonna go offline and tell me what you think.
All right, we'll do that, Professor Patterson. What do you think?
Well, I'm kind of on Ray's side here, and I'm trying to remember who called earlier that said this is more than a misdemeanor. And I think Ray and I are on the same page here that, you know, this was something that was foolish and that he should have known better. And he was in a position where he knew it would be costly, and you kind of shake your head and you say why. But, you know, the interesting thing about this, you know, this is not quite, we've had a lot of cases, several CEOs at top businesses in this country, a head coach momentary at Notre Dame, not far from where I am, it's the headquarters of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. Either last year or the year before, the chief executive there had to step down. And the reason why I put those people in a different category, they lied on their resumes. They inflated their backgrounds.
Right.
And they did it in a way that got them a position. They wouldn't have gotten to where they are if they hadn't claimed to have had a PhD that they didn't have, or an MBA that they didn't have, or coaching background that they didn't have. You know, Brian Williams didn't get anything out of this. This didn't get him his job. It didn't get him his position. It was stupid. And I think that's a different category. But again, I go back to the point of, can he reestablish his credibility and trust? And I think that's pretty doubtful, and that's why I think he might well have kind of reached the end, at least his career as a top network anchor.
More phone calls in a moment. Our guest this hour is Thomas Patterson, author of, I don't often really recommend books, but if you're, I was captivated by his book. We interviewed him last year, and it's an important book because it looks at the press. It's titled Informing the News, The Need for Knowledge-Based Journalism. We're talking about Brian Williams' fall from grace this hour, how it happened, if it's a big deal, if it's a mortal sin or a venial sin when it comes to or if it just calls for time in purgatory, when it looking at all the story of Brian Williams and his suspension for 6 months, and whether or not he's lost credibility now because he's being made the butt of a lot of jokes, and that's it. Is it over for him, and should it be over for him? So we're asking Thomas about this. Thomas Patterson is our guest. He is Bradley Professor of Government and the Press at Harvard. He's also the author of a number of other books, The Vanishing Voter, Out of Order, The Unseeing Eye, and others. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can find us on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tim in Vernon County is next. Hello, Tim.
Hello.
Hi, Tim.
Yeah. Hey. Yeah, I'm a small-town journalist, worked in newspaper and radio, and I think the situation with Brian Williams is somewhat overblown. I definitely think he needed to have some kind of disciplinary action, but the offense that I see that he committed probably is a lot less offensive than a lot of other things that we've seen in the past with some other news organizations. I thought John Stewart's take on the situation was brilliant, as your guest mentioned. And not only that, but John Stewart did a brilliant analysis of the lead-up to the Iraq War and pointing out that the Bush administration was actually planting information with the New York Times and other organizations, and then going on the air and saying, well, it's been reported in the New York Times, so it must be true, and then had this circle of information that was misinforming people, and you know, the press was kind of complicit in that. And to me, that's much more serious, offense. And the other thing I would say is, you know, misremembering something 12 years later is not as serious as some of these other situations where people are, you know, in some situations even knowingly passing on information they know is probably not true. We had a situation here in Wisconsin not too long ago with the protests in Madison when Fox News was playing footage of a crowd that was from a different protest. That's a lot more serious offense. And I'll say one other thing on the trust issue. I heard you talking about the trust and trust people put in anchors. What I'm seeing is that with the advent of social media, it seems to me like people are getting information from so many different places. They're going back to sources that they feel they can trust because they want to confirm or not confirm that, you know, what they're hearing is either true or not true. And I think they're relying even more so on those sources. So in a situation like Brian Williams, I think it is crucial that somebody like that can be looked at and trusted that what they're saying is accurate.
Thank you very much. Important points. Thomas.
Yeah, I mean, well, Tim, you know, is working in this area and I think has a good perspective on it. You know, one of the things we haven't talked about, even though you foreshadowed it a bit with the Ed Rabel quote at the top of the show, Kathleen, is how much our loss of trust in the media has to do with the sensationalism that's crept in.
Yes.
In surveys, this is the one thing that people kind of rate at the top, that the press, that these news stories are over the top. I mean, if you watch CNN, for example, you'd think everything in the world is breaking news, even when nothing new is happening. I don't know how many breaking news things they can do about. I mean, how many times it can be breaking news that there is no news that we haven't found the Malaysian airliner yet? I mean, it just
exactly.
And this has become so pronounced in this scramble for audience, and it's trying to kind of attract attention away from the others. That, and this more than anything, much more than what Brian Williams did, this more than anything, I think, has eroded trust in the press. That we increasingly see that what this business is about money, and it's not about informing the public.
Yeah.
And somewhere in there, how can we transfer public trust to an institution that seems so obviously in the business category and not in the public service category?
And it's so important. And you cite, I mean, this is a figure that I hope will stay with people and will take action in some way. I don't know how. This Gallup poll of 2012, a mere 8%, you remind us, of respondents, 8% said they had a great deal of confidence in the news media's ability to report the news fully, accurately, and fairly. Holy Toledo, that's terrible.
Well, journalists ought to be thankful that Congress is out there because, you know, members of Congress sometimes think even lower than that. So they may or may not be at the bottom, depending on kind of what we're thinking about at the moment. But, you know, those two occupations, the occupation of journalist and the occupation of politician, over the last 50 years have really suffered in terms of their public image, and it's important that they have trust, that they have our confidence. That, you know, they, in many ways, they're our chief representatives, and journalists in some ways represent us. They take us to their world that we can't see directly. Our elected leaders, you know, take us into policy debates and do things on our behalf. We have to have trust and confidence in them, but it starts with them. And unfortunately, too many things in politics and in the news business in the last couple of decades have eroded that trust.
Jan in Marshfield is next. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
I have a question. I've never heard anybody bring up the possibility that there could be some cognitive/medical issue involved here where he's having memory problems. And is that as difficult to talk about as a moral failing of embellishing the truth?
You know, I haven't, Jen, I haven't seen anything in that area, and I guess I would be a little skeptical about it. I don't know where that would be coming from. I think there's a trajectory to this particular story, when he's told it, when things started to merge, that would suggest that this wasn't just a one-time thing, that it's been something that's been developing and getting to be a larger and larger story. And I suspect that may generally be true of war stories or, you know, what we did on the athletic field when we were in high school, those kinds of things. I think we probably, those are the things that, you know, tend to get bigger and bigger over time. So, you know, there may or may not be something to that allegation, but this seems to be a pretty normal human behavior.
Well, I need to ask you, before we say goodbye, we may have time for one more phone call. Because of your position, you'll be able to give us this advice. Where do we go to get the truth?
Well, I'm always reluctant to promote a particular news outlet, so I won't list that. But I do think the best reporting still is coming from our newspapers. And then when we get into broadcasting, I think public broadcasting is where we're getting our best information. You know, both to some degree are increasingly under pressure.
Yes.
Newspapers more obviously, but, you know, you look at public broadcasting even more on the television side than the radio side. There's a real loss of audience there. NPR has done terrific in building audience, but it's an aging audience. So, you know, you always worry that the places that really are reliable sources of good information, as, you know, we criticize the news industry for trying to make money, but, you know, it also takes money to do good reporting. And so the underwriting of news outlets, whether in public broadcasting through listener contributions or in the newspaper through good advertising and circulation revenues, these are important to, you know, doing good journalism. But, you know, what newsrooms need to keep in sight throughout is that their business really is the news, and their business is not making money. That's a different side of the organization that's responsible for that. And I'm afraid Brian Williams got caught up in what is the larger story about trying to sell the news and selling it at almost any cost. And I don't think he was thinking about that with this story, but there's a mentality increasingly around the news business that we're in the business of selling news as opposed to telling it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being with us, and thanks for writing this book. I'll have to read some
Kathleen,
books.
Can I send you some of our snow from Boston? I grew up in Minnesota, and
I haven't
seen snow like that even in Minnesota.
We're up to
5,000 inches. That's
and that is the truth. He's speaking the truth. Thomas, thank you so much. Thomas Patterson, his book, well worth a read, Informing the News, The Need for Knowledge-Based Journalism. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this hour and on-air production.